You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be running out of.
Come over here, kid. Wait, sir. You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of water. And you fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the one country's most delicious hour. I hope you're having a good long weekend. Long weekends never seem that long. I don't know why, but they don't. Anyway, a couple things to talk to you about before I introduce our guest and our topic for the evening. First of all, I want to send out Mouthful's warmest best wishes to Tom Eklund, a woodworker from Sebastopol. If you attend farmers markets, I've seen him at several. I know he's at the Santa Rosa Original, Sebastopol. I saw him somewhere else too, possibly Windsor. I'm not sure. Anyway, he makes beautiful, beautiful potting tables. He makes little garden toolboxes. I have a really interesting sort of modern-looking bird bath that he made. He makes wonderful outdoor tables. He had a fire yesterday. It was in the paper this morning. I saw it and I thought, oh my God, that's Tom. So I called him and his workshop burned down. He was working. He left for the store. The fire started. A neighbor called him and he didn't get home in time. He lost 100% of his woodworking tools. He also lost a lot of wood that's replaceable. He is insured, but he was, as you can imagine, pretty darn devastated. The fact that he called me back was a good sign. I gave him a pep talk. You know, Tom is part of the community. He is part of the farmers market community. I love what he does. I have two of his potting tables, and I just love them. So anyway, really good wishes for Tom coming back better and stronger than ever. It'll be okay. Things were insured. But, you know, we all worry about fire. I have dreams about, you know, my house burning down. It's just something that we all dread, especially if we work at home. You know, you lose not just everything from your domestic life, but you're in danger of losing things of your work life as well. So anyway, our best thoughts are with Tom. I want to say, hey, the Bohemian this week, right on a great article about K&L Bistro. I was so happy to see that. The San Francisco Chronicle, for some reason, I don't want to speculate about, never puts them on their top 100 list of restaurants in the Bay Area, and they so completely should be. They've been there, gosh, their 10th anniversary was October 2011. They have been good. They have been great since day one. They just get better and better. So I just saw the article. When I walked in, I haven't even had a chance to read it yet, but they give them an A+. There's a great picture of Karen and Lucas Martin, who share chef duties, owners. That's definitely a family run restaurant, and it's just a classic French bistro. So the Bohemian is really, really cool to see that. And then one other thing, I want to tell you something I've been doing. It's an interesting project, and if you want more information, the way that you can get it is to send me an email at catsmilk@sonic.net. But there's been a grant given to a Hawaiian history organization. The project started in November, and it ends, at least this phase, which for all I know could be the last phase, it ends at the end of July, and it's taking something like, I don't know, 200 years of Hawaiian newspapers and transcribing them so that they can be put into a database and searched, because right now they're only, you know, the sort of visual image that you can't search by search for words. And so they have something like, I think there's like 5,000 people registered to work on the project. I don't know how many who are actually doing it. My guess is around 1,000. But what you do is you register, and then you reserve a page, and that page comes up in preview, which is, you know, a visual program. And then you also download a text document, and then you simply transcribe. You don't need to know Hawaiian. You don't need a special keyboard. You just type what you see. The instructions are really simple. It took me about 5 minutes to learn how to do it. It takes anywhere from 3, I think, to maybe 5 hours to transcribe a page, depending on, you know, just how many columns, how many photographs. You're really lucky if you get a page with a lot of photographs, because it goes really fast. But I just completed my 5th page of transcription and turned it in. And it's if you love Hawaii and you have a little bit of time on your hands and you feel comfortable, you know, around a keyboard, you might want to think about doing it. And if you send me an email at catsmilk@sonic.net, I will send you the link on how to sign up. It's really easy, but it's better for you to just click on the link than for me to give you all the, you know, the URL and all that. So just send me an email, catsmilk@sonic.net. It's a really great thing to do. And here's one of the little things. It's totally secondary, but each page that you turn in, you can dedicate to someone. And that so touched me. And I just imagine people 50 and 100 years from now, you know, researching something, and they come across this page, and they see that it was transcribed by, you know, Michelle Anna Jordan, and they see that that particular page is dedicated to her father, who lived such and such years, who I never knew, but who was in Hilo at some point before I was born, and Hilo is my favorite town in Hawaii. So, and there's some other very special dedications. So I just find that really an added motivation. So really, check it out. If you love Hawaii, you may definitely want to do, or not may and definitely don't go together. You may want to do this. And on that note, I've rambled enough. We have in the studio with us Terry Tasso of Napa Valley Botanicals. Did I get it right, Terry?
Got it right.
Excellent. And I hope that Paula Downing is going to be joining us. If Paula was sound asleep on her kitchen floor, I wouldn't be at all surprised. Mm-hmm. She is woman works really, really hard. She's, of course, the manager of both the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market and the Sebastopol Certified Farmers Market. There is the annual herb fair is coming up next Sunday.
That's right.
At the Sebastopol Market. Yeah. It's an amazing affair. People who grow herbs come from really all over Northern California, and there are people who come on this particular Sunday to get herbs from those specific people.
Yeah, because a lot of the vendors that we have, and especially the plant vendors, are offering hundreds of varieties of herbs that you don't just find anywhere.
Yeah.
And some of them are very unusual and hard to find, and others are pretty common that you might find in your garden stores. But nobody, you can't go anywhere in one location and find the variety, the sheer variety and the quantity of medicinal, culinary, and native herbs that you'll find at this fair. Even one of our vendors, Ben Cam, that has Botanical Preservation Corps, specializes in plants from the Americas, from Latin America, from South America, from Africa. Where are you going to go? What garden shop are you going to go to and find succulents and different medicinal plants from South America? Nowhere. So just for the plant vendors alone, it's astonishing what we offer at this little fair.
Yeah, the plant vendors are just amazing. I know I got several things last year that are, most of them are still doing pretty well in my garden. That's one of the things, they seem to come back and you know, they seem to be perennial. Many of them seem to be perennials.
Yeah, most of what I grow and most of what you'll find, we do grow a lot of perennials. Mm-hmm. There's a few annuals, your basils and your cilantros, sure, and stuff like that.
Yeah, the culinary mostly, herbs.
The culinary, sure, herbs, a lot of those are, yeah, actually annual. But even then, things like dill and cilantro even will reseed quite easily. Mm-hmm. So, you'll find both. You'll find the annuals, but a great array of perennials, mm-hmm, that some very long-lived that will just come back year after year after year.
Yeah. Now, one herb I think we should talk about right now, because I went into a grocery store on Friday. Not a grocery store. I can't even think, my hay fever is so bad. I went into a pharmacy, and I was looking for eye drops. And I asked somebody, and she said, oh, let me see if we have any left. Allergies, I guess, yeah, it's the wind. Yeah. Allergies just this week, yeah, went insane, yeah, and I ran out of my good natural eye drops, and I needed something commercial. But it seems to me that everyone right now should know about plantain.
Plantain is a really good one, and it's one of my favorite herbs, and it's so funny because a lot of my favorite herbs are so weedy. They're just weeds.
Yeah.
You know, roadside weeds.
Plantain's everywhere.
Plantain's everywhere, but there's something about plantain. It really calms. It really has that hypoallergenic effect. It's really calming. It has a lot of mucilage in it, which is interesting because that's kind of what you're trying to combat. One of the other, I brought plants for you specifically today because,
oh, really?
I knew that you were suffering, and I like to talk about the common herbs. I like to talk about dandelion and plantain. One of the herbs that I brought that I wanted to talk about because the spring allergies have been so bad are the mints.
Oh.
Everybody has mints in, yeah, their yard. Most people have mints. And mint is probably one of the best for spring allergies. The allergies are real bad this year. The wind has been relentless the last couple weeks. There's actual visible allergens floating around in the air.
You can see them.
And one grain of pollen can trigger a cascade of mucus production in us.
Yeah, and we should say cascade is a term that it's not just a... It's not just a generic term. I learned a lot about allergy cascade when there was a similar bad year, but it must be when Gail Julian, who you probably know.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, she came to my house to my rescue when, yay, I was having a very bad allergy
cascade.
Herbalist
on call, I love that.
Yeah, and it was similarly bad. It had to be at least a decade, probably more. And she says, oh, you're in the middle of an allergy cascade. Mm-hmm. So that means one symptom triggers another, right?
And the thing about mint, what mint does, it's very clear. Clearing, which people don't know that about it.
How do you use it? It's clearing, is it ingested?
It's ingested, okay. And you would take it either as a tea or my favorite is in recipes like, you're probably familiar with tabbouleh, which is...
writing about it today.
Were you? Really?
Yeah.
Okay, bulgur with... It's, you know, there's several different variations, but the main, mm-hmm, variation is bulgur wheat, mint, spearmint, and parsley, and then you add whatever else you have, whether it's tomatoes, cucumbers, red, mm-hmm, onions, or whatever.
Yeah, I do one in the spring that I really love with... sorrel.
Yeah, and mint. Sorrel, that's awesome.
It's so good with sorrel because, you know, we have sorrel before we have tomatoes or cucumbers.
That's true. And that's true. A lot of the herbs actually come before you have your vegetables, so why not use them? Well, the other variation on that recipe that I've been experimenting with is one made with quinoa, which is really protein-rich. Quinoa and mint and cilantro. And cilantro is another very hypoallergenic herb. Nobody thinks about cilantro that way. But it's very calming to your... See, what's happening is your immune system is just going haywire. Mm-hmm. It's super sensitive, and it's just going crazy. And cilantro has the ability to kind of calm that sensitivity along with the mint. So you mix mint with cilantro, with the quinoa. And again, you
and
add...
And then what sort of liquids?
The quinoa you would make just like you do...
You cook it in water.
It's usually one in one, just like rice. It's usually one cup water to one cup, 2 cups water to 1 cup quinoa for, mm-hmm, 15 to 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. Some people like to cook it longer than that.
And then would you add olive oil and lemon juice?
Exactly. Okay. Just like, pretend you're making tabbouleh, basically. Uh-huh. And you could add red onion or whatever you have around the house. But the main thing you want to get in there is the mint and the cilantro. And both of those are very calming, very clearing. Mint actually has the ability to break up congestion in not just your lungs, but also in your airways, in your, mm-hmm, in your sinuses, in your throat. I don't know what it does for you. A lot of people suffer with eye
problems.
Mine
is mostly eye.
I don't know how that works, but you know, congestion is congestion, and sensitivity is sensitivity. So I would imagine. So beverage teas, you know, mint is really good in summer.
It's really good with lemonade.
Yeah, you can put it in lemonade. You can make a batch of sun tea and then chill it down and just drink it like that. If you're not into hot tea, you know, when it's warm. But yeah, try to get more mint.
Yeah,
mint.
And also agua. If you make agua fresca, you can just put, if you mix, say, strawberry agua fresca, you just put a bunch of mint leaves in. Don't grind them up. Just put the whole sprigs in, and it will.
I mean, that even just sounds cooling.
It sounds
refreshing.
Well, if you think about
cooling.
Like mint dental floss, mint chapstick, it immediately has a cooling response, so it makes sense.
Yeah. So.
Interesting. Well, the thing I've heard about plantain, was what Gail Julian told me, is that it's the best thing for your eyes. That it will turn down the volume of that really hot, red, prickly, teary, itchy.
Itchy, yeah.
And she just, what she did was she came to my house with some plantain. She sort of pounded it up a little bit in a mortar and then poured boiling water over it. Smushed it around a little bit.
that is the correct term, by the way.
Yes, and then put it into a paper towel.
Mm-hmm.
And
so just
soaked
like
up all that water.
Poultice.
And then had me, you know, put it on my eyes and then just keep it in the freezer. And whenever I had the reaction, she said, this will last you several days. So I would just take it out of the freezer, let it warm up, and it works really well. You just have to feel good enough to go outside and pick the plantain, which I didn't today.
Chamomile is another one that's really
good that way.
I've heard
that. Chamomile tea bags.
So you can just take tea bags and the same thing, steep them, and then just set that once they've cooled down a bit, set those on your eyelids.
Right.
And that had more to do with swelling, but I imagine it would be helpful if you didn't have plantain
to
do the same thing.
If you don't have plantain, go to chamomile or even sliced cucumbers.
Yeah.
But I have found the longest lasting results comes from plantain.
Yeah.
I think it's a miracle drug. And we see, and if you don't know what it is, it's got long leaves with veins in the leaves that stretch the length of the leaf, not perpendicular, and then has a single flower, and the flower blooms very briefly at the top, and it looks like a ballerina in a tutu, in a little white tutu.
Okay, now I'm going to see that every time. I never thought of that.
So that goes away pretty quick. I think it's five white petals that make the tutu. Those get blown away fairly quickly. So it's this long spike flower with, I guess, seeds on the end. But once you've seen, or you can, these days, all you have to do is go to Google and write in plantain and hit images, and you will see
You'll recognize it right away.
Immediately, you'll see it.
And I really don't want to be anywhere where I'm too far away from plantain just because of its healing properties for wounds, too.
Oh, for wounds as well?
Yeah. It has the ability to rebuild tissue, and it actually is a little anesthetic, too. So I've actually had, I had a serious fall once in my backyard, and my backyard is actually full of plantain, and I immediately went to the plantain. I chewed it up because I didn't even want to go into the house and deal with a mortar and pestle. And I actually just chewed up a big gob of it and just stuck it right on there. And it actually will take the pain away.
Wow.
But
That's great to know.
It's really great for any kind of acute injury that you might have, especially cuts or a rash. Or in my case, I had a little bit of both. I fell through a chair. And so I got skin abrasion that was pretty bad. And boy, it just seemed to cool it down and take the pain away. Yet I had to keep applying it, but it's pretty amazing medicine, and it's everywhere. And that's one of the reasons why I like to talk about some of the common plants, because I think that people forget just how amazing the medicine can be.
In general, in this country and perhaps other countries, I don't know, we're sort of trained to think of medicine as something you have to go to the store, the hospital, or a doctor to get.
That's right.
And there, the natural world is full of so many things. In fact, I haven't read the whole article, but I just saw a headline that said there's evidence that oregano is an effective treatment for prostate cancer. Did you see that?
Wow.
That came out this week, and it's on my list of things to research.
Yeah.
But there's so many things like that, we're so removed from it. And it with everything else that's happening with, you know, the young farmers movements and family farms making some degree of comeback, it makes sense that we're looking to this again. But
Exactly. It's a small, that's what I really love about the Sonoma County Herb Exchange, which, by the way, this herb fair that we're going to be talking about today is a benefit for the Herb Exchange. And one of the reasons we started the Herb Exchange in 1999 was the question was put out there, why are we buying our herbs from India when we knew they were growing in our own backyards already? Yeah. And we live in a climate that is fantastic for growing a great variety mm-hmm. of herbs. And so we started on that premise that we could grow our own medicine. And in 2000, I attended the first meeting that they had where people that might have wanted to grow medicinal herbs sat down across the table from people that would be interested in buying medicinal herbs. And I sat there with my pen and my notebook, and I wrote down every herb that they said that they would buy. And I promptly went out. It was exactly 12 years ago this weekend, Memorial Day weekend in May of 2000. And I went to my folks' property in Napa, and I planted out every herb that they said that they would buy. And by August of 2000, just 3 months later, I was selling my herbs to the Herb Exchange.
Oh, that's
it was
so
like
great.
So amazing. And there were buyers. These were medicine makers and tea makers and practitioners and just people that just like herbalists. We have a lot of herbalists in this area mm-hmm. that just make their own medicine for their friends and family for their personal use. Mm-hmm. So that was really exciting to me. And that's one of the things I love about the Herb Exchange is same as the farmers market is that we are supporting small little cottage businesses mm-hmm. that couldn't possibly, I could never bring my herb plants to a store and have them sell them. They want such a low price for them,
sure.
you know, and I'm really small and I don't have a lot of volume and I need to get a certain price for those plants because it costs me a certain amount to produce them. And people lose sight of that. We're so used to things being inexpensive or trying to get the best deal we possibly can. And sometimes it's forgotten about the true value of things, how much things actually really cost when you're producing them yourself.
Yeah, not just that, but also this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately because you always have to counter the action, the claim that, well, the farmer's market's so much more expensive or, sure, grass-fed meat is good or good eggs are just fine, but who can afford them?
Right.
And, you know, so is better food, better medicine, better natural ingredients, are those only for people who can afford it, or is there something that's missing from the equation? And I think that there's something really vital missing from the equation that is less abstract. I mean, the abstract things are, and they're only sort of abstract, you're supporting your neighbors. You're representing the true cost, the money staying in your community rather than being filtered through a corporation.
Exactly.
Those things are all really valid and really important. But I find if you quit, you know, like micromanaging, it's the same when cooking. Like people will sit in cooking classes I teach. Well, was that an eighth of a teaspoon or a quarter of a teaspoon? It doesn't matter. You know,
get in there and do it.
You find that, I mean, if you go and you buy, I don't know what, you know, eggs cost $1.69 a dozen or something if you're buying in a national grocery store. If you're buying eggs for that price, but then you're paying some outlandish amount for packaged cereal, which I could not believe. I haven't bought cereal since like 1970. the price is astonishing. If you quit buying packaged foods and your entire diet is based on what you can access close to home, right. I think it all balances out and you get more. You're Saturday, I mean, you eat a scrambled egg from a Happy Chicken. You can barely get down two. One is going to satisfy you.
Yes, you'll notice the difference. So it is a process of education to the consumers mm-hmm. that they understand. And that was one of the things that the Herb Exchange had to go through early on, and sometimes we still do, and that is that people want to know why our herbs are so much more than you can find out there, either in the United States or abroad. But you have to understand that chamomile that's coming from Egypt, you know, these people are maybe making 50 cents a day to harvest chamomile. It's coming over on container ships. Who knows if it's being irradiated or how it's being treated,
yeah.
if it's being treated with fungicides or whatever, herbicides. And there's a cost, an environmental cost that comes with bringing something like chamomile all the way over from another continent. Yeah. It just doesn't make sense when you can grow it in your own yard.
And I would imagine as well that all of that handling, the irradiation, the fungicide, you know, all that kind of stuff diminishes the healing qualities. Well,
certainly it does. Absolutely it does. Yeah. And if you observe, if you go to the Herb Exchange and look at the herbs that come through there, they're visibly more vibrant, mm-hmm. and beautiful and colorful. They look alive. You know, where a lot of times you might see herbs on a shelf in a store and they just all kind of look the same. They all look cut up and kind of dead. But because they have lost some of their medicinal mm-hmm. virtues. You know, fluorescent lighting is pretty hard on herbs. But I understand that that is the way that they have to display them, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty hard on them. But yeah, it's there's nothing like growing local herbs and harvesting them that day, and then the buyer coming that afternoon and picking them up.
Yeah.
As opposed to them coming from Egypt, you know, 2 months ago or whatever.
And it's possible here.
Yes.
And if it's possible here, why not do it? We're going to take a little musical break. We'll be right back here on Mouthful.
Are you going to Scarborough Fair? Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of mine. To make me a cataract shirt, a deep forest green, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Without no crested cloud, without no sleep or night, and echoes the child of a fountain, she'll be a true love of mine. Salt water and the sea strands and polishes her fan. She'll be a true love of mine. Tell her to reap it in a sickle of blazing in scarlet battalion. Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme.
It's Mouthful. We have a full house. Paula Downing has arrived. And we also have with us...
Anne.
What's your last name?
Wyatt Lyon, Stella Flora Botanicals.
So, that's right, Stella Flora Botanicals. Awesome. So we are talking about the upcoming... What's the exact name of the fair?
All Things Herbal.
All Things Herbal, taking place at the Sebastopol Farmers Market on Sunday. It opens at 10. People get there earlier. It winds up around 1:30. Yes. I know that.
But we actually go on till 3 o'clock.
Oh, you go to the...
Yeah.
The goes so on to 3. Excellent.
Yeah, people were complaining that we were ending it too soon, and, you know, they were getting off work or getting off from whatever activity they were doing in the morning, and they wanted us to go a little bit longer. So we go till 3 o'clock.
Oh, excellent.
And some of the farmers market vendors actually hang out with us. So, uh-huh. Yeah, there's still a lot to do up until 3.
Okay, great. So, Anne, tell me about Stella Flora Botanicals.
It's small herbal business. I make creams and lotions, things for the occasional spa, plus I make a lot of elixirs. So you were talking to, or I was listening to the show, waiting for Paula to pick me up, and you guys were talking about mints and allergies and such, so I brought this rosemary elder elixir that has a lot of things that will clear the sinuses for congestion and cough that tickle the throat. A lot of people who have allergies use that one. Plus my milky oats and mint elixir, which is good to calm the system and also temper the mucous membrane. So I thought since you two were discussing that, I'd put
good.
It in the
It's
bag.
A good time. It seems like, I think it's with the wind.
Absolutely.
Allergies. I didn't go to the Sebastopol Farmers Market today. I apologize, Paula.
I noticed, yeah.
My allergies for the last 4 days, there are times I can barely see because for me it's all itchy, sneezy eyes.
Yeah.
You know, I want to claw my eyes out.
Yeah, yeah. You were talking about eyes before. I would do a rosemary and an eye wash.
Rosemary.
That's really clearing and good for the mucous membranes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, especially around the tongue. And then this is then an emollient that I make with a lot of herbs in it, and it also has a lot of... It's a little thicker on the shea butter and has... it also has mint in it, good for the hands when you're out there gardening.
Uh-huh.
Good for cooling the feet when you're on your feet all day.
Oh, nice
working,
to know.
Yeah, as we get into the hot weather.
How long have you been doing this?
Almost 8 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And are you based? Are you based in Sebastopol?
Yeah, I live just south of Sebastopol. Uh-huh. I have not yet joined the farmers market this season because earlier this spring I had kind of a cough thing myself that was going on for a while. So herbal fair next weekend will probably be the beginning for me this time.
Well, I want to know more about what you do because we have similar coloring.
Yeah.
So definitely want to pay attention to what you do.
Yeah.
I want to know about the eye wash. How do you do it?
You can just make a tea with rosemary, just like you'd make a tea and then let it cool down and use a cotton ball or anything. And or I guess you could put it also maybe in a... They have the little tea sacks these days, or a little muslin bag.
Mm-hmm. And just then lay it on your eyes?
Yeah, and just lay it on your eyes. You can even then squeeze a couple drops into the eyes to clear them out. Mm-hmm.
You know what else I'm thinking will work is little baby, you know, baby washcloths.
Oh, yeah.
You have a sewing machine. You just sew that into a little bag.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And then you stick whatever herbs after
That's
you've
right.
made it into a tea.
That's right.
Uh-huh. And you can keep it in the freezer.
Huh.
And then pull it out if you're getting an attack.
Uh-huh.
So I'm working
if you
on
want-
that.
You could do that. And, yeah, you were talking about something to wash, like with the drops. You know, so that's why I'm thinking of the tea, you know, a nice little tea.
Yeah.
To
so
do that
rosemary,
with.
That's great.
Rosemary is great for that.
In my garden.
Yeah, that's good for that.
So, Paula, how long, do we know how long you've been doing all things herbal at the market?
Do we know, Terry? It's been
this
a
is
while.
Our ninth year.
Is it ninth?
I skipped last year, and I heard a lot about it. I bet you did. Why did you not have the herb fair? When is the herb fair coming back? So this will be our ninth.
Terry needed
I love
a rest.
It's one of my favorite because I always learn a lot, and because the herbalists are all interesting to talk to, and because the plant lady—I don't even know her name—but the plant lady comes
from Herb Farm,
and she has such interesting plants. You just don't see very many people grow those.
Who's the one that comes from? I don't know if it's Davis or
Vacaville. That's Rose at Morning Sun Herb Farm.
Okay, I could not believe their booth. It was astonishing the things that they had, and it. The market was clearly filled with a lot of people coming primarily for that. And
right,
I mean, then
right.
they were doing other things, but it's like, oh, you're here. This is the only day of the year that you're here.
That's right. And the same with Bohemian Herbals. Mm-hmm. Deanne Wilson, the same thing. She doesn't do farmers markets anymore. She's out in Occidental. And this is one of the few things that she does where you can get her plant material, too, unless you go out to Occidental. So between Botanical Preservation Corps, Morning Sun Herb Farm, Bohemian Herbals, and myself, the variety of herbs that you can buy is astonishing.
It's great.
When you're making all of your things, how do you source your ingredients?
I grow some things. Mm-hmm. We have a little bit of, we call it a farmette. We have a little bit of acreage, so we grow a few things. And then I will source through the Herb Exchange. Sometimes I even sell flowers and such that I have excess of to, mm-hmm. through the Herb Exchange. And through other direct friends.
So you source them locally.
Yeah, as much as possible, mm-hmm. absolutely. Sophia's Garden, Monique Camp out at Sophia's Garden is another great source. She sells the Herb Exchange.
I think you brought her to Mouthful before, Sophia's
Garden. Yeah, she's been on the show before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought so. Yeah. You know, for some people, this is going to seem like a stupid question, but I know that there are other people who really don't know. So let's explore this for a minute. What is the difference between herbs and spices?
Oh, don't look at me. I don't know.
Come on, Paula. You know, I don't really know how to answer that one, but I think of spices. They're usually tropical in nature. They usually come from the tropics, and they're usually mostly just used for flavoring. Where herbs are used more, they can be used culinary-wise. They are medicinal, even though a lot of the spices still have medicinal properties, you know, clearly. But traditionally, over time, they were used just as flavoring agents.
Because mm-hmm. the way that I thought about it, tropical, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But also, herbs seem to involve either the leaves and the flowers or the whole plant. Whereas, to a large degree, spices seem to be the fruit or the berries.
Yeah, but that would be sure. crossover because, like, there you think about elder crossover. Or hawthorn or anything like right. that, and that's the berries.
Oh, is it?
Right. And okay. there's a lot of herbs that are used where the bark is used, and the same with spices, like cinnamon, where the
cinnamon,
bark
cinnamon
is
the bark.
Yeah.
But like turmeric, yeah. for example, mm-hmm. and turmeric mm-hmm. is now considered a very, very good treatment for arthritis.
It's an mm-hmm. excellent yeah. treatment right. for any
other things.
It's an anti-inflammatory and one uh-huh. of the best in the world.
Yeah. How do you use it?
You take it in a capsule.
Yeah.
They powder it.
Yeah. Powder just like when you if you buy turmeric spice, if you have a good source for turmeric spice, mm-hmm. You know, like culinary, mm-hmm. you can put that into capsules and take it daily.
Yeah, I do that myself.
Yeah, I was doing it, and I need to get more.
I've always wanted to grow that one. I don't know if I could get away with growing that one here.
I don't think you can. I think I grew some for a bit, and it doesn't fruit. I mean, you get
the root
the foliage.
Oh, that's right, the root. Kind of like ginger, that, yeah. you know, because you can grow ginger from a slice of a root.
Right.
But I don't know about turmeric.
But it needs it really hot.
Really hot and humid.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We just don't do that here.
Yeah. Most of those things come from within, like, what, 15 degrees of the equator. Like pepper.
Exactly.
Black pepper grows within 15
exactly.
degrees of the
right.
equator.
I think of spices a lot of times, too, are the ones that have been ground into, you know, you're talking about nutmeg
right.
and chilies, and when the ground cinnamons have two flavor, really pungent mm-hmm. flavors in the spices a lot more, then herbs are a little bit more diverse, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
And that you use them dry in culinary ways.
Oregano
and or basil
fresh.
And that, or fresh.
Yeah.
But also that they're used for teas and medicinal properties.
We have an answer, and actually... No, I'm going to get Mike, our engineer. He just looked up what's the difference between herbs and spices. I think it's
Yay.
The sort of thing we all know.
Good old Google.
We all know what it is, but we don't necessarily know how to say it concisely. So what did you find, Michael?
So it says here on InfoPlease that spices are found in plants grown in the tropical and subtropical regions of the world, mainly aromatic fragrant products like cinnamon, cloves, ginger, and pepper. And herbs have usually been recognized as the more green, leafy products like mint, rosemary, and thyme grown in temperate climates.
Right. Hey, we were all right.
We were all right.
We were all right. That's why they say it takes a village.
Thank you very much. And I think that warrants a musical break.
Thank you. That was off.
I fell asleep.
Girl. A dreamer of big truths, I run into night.
Bad CD. Sorry about that. We don't know. You know, sometimes our CD player gets a little cranky. Is that your first time, Mike? It's Mike's first time. I have been doing music shows so many times, and you know, I'll just be going along, and I've got a nice 8-minute song on, and 45 seconds into it, nothing. So, you know, trial by fire. Anyway, that was Cinnamon Girl. Aren't I clever?
Yes.
I tried to find music about my favorite, one of my favorite herbs, and except for Scarborough Fair, I couldn't find anything listenable about sage.
I love sage.
We've talked about this before, Terry, not on the air. Why does my sage always die?
I know, and I get this so much, and it's actually happened to me, too.
Oh, okay, so
I've
it's not me.
I had a beautiful sage that thrived for years, and nothing changed. I did nothing different, and one day it just up and died, and I don't know why. And I've just kind of come to the conclusion that sage aren't as long-lived as I thought they were, although I have them at the farm now. They are 8 years old, and they're fine. They are not on irrigation. They get no water other than whatever there is during the year.
Uh-huh.
And so I still do not know the mystery of why sage just up and dies.
If you have some that are 8 years old, you don't have a problem. I don't think I've ever had a sage last me longer than 8 months.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know.
It's my biggest gardening problem, except for gophers.
Yeah. What's all the different things is white sage, and what's all the different in culinary sage? What's the white
pineapple
sage.
Well, the sage. White sage is still a salvia, but it's a really resinous plant that grows in the desert, in the high desert. Mm-hmm. And so it's not my favorite for eating, but it's a revered plant. It's a sacred plant to Native Americans.
What about the
it's
one?
Used in smudging more than cooking, although they used to cook with it too.
Uh-huh.
But to me, it's like the difference between European bay and our native bay,
which
our native bay is very pungent, and I would never cook with it.
No.
If you had European bay to use, the difference is just
European bay.
It's delicious, where the California bay is really pungent and overpowering, and I think it would ruin a dish. So you don't cook with the white sage so much.
Uh-huh. But all the spiritual properties. I mean, how did you know anything about the history of that? How it came to be used as a smudge? And I mean, I just got advised to use it in my personal situation,
really?
And so I just wondered why.
Yes, you could use some.
I'm not going to ask you to give
away
that recommendation.
No, the Native Americans used to. They felt that it was a purifying herb, and so that was they would use it in their sweat lodges, and hence the smudging they felt. And a lot of this information came to these people because they visioned with the plant. They got information directly from the plant.
Now this brings me to a question, and we may need to get on Google again. I wasn't planning this, but there's a type of salvia in Mexico. Is it Salvia divinorum?
Yes.
Did I get the name right?
That's divinorum. That's it.
I heard about this on NPR, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. I just heard a report, and what fascinated me about it, and I'm really not a druggie, definitely, but what fascinated me was that supposedly, I think ingesting this, though I could be wrong about ingesting, maybe it's inhaling, you would, within seconds, be all the way into an experience similar to an acid trip, that within literally seconds you would be like totally your normal daytime awareness, and then smack in the middle of something as intense as a very intense LSD trip, 15 minutes later, back. So it's like this 15 minutes into the heart of psychedelia, and I just find that fascinating. What do you know about this?
I don't know a lot about it, and I've never used it myself. Mm-hmm. It is mildly hallucinogenic, and I don't know, because I've never tried it, how far
how hallucinogenic it is. Mm-hmm. I do know that it was starting to cause a problem with teenagers that were seeking the plant right. out, and then as teenagers will do, abusing it. If a little is good, then a lot is better,
right.
and really abusing it and running into all sorts
yes,
of problems.
A few states have made it right. illegal.
So it's now right. illegal in some places, uh-huh. and it's pretty hard to get a hold of the plant. But that's really sad to me, because a lot of these really powerful medicines, and to me that's medicine, that mm-hmm. that actual medicinal action is a very powerful medicine, mm-hmm. and it's almost disrespectful yeah. to use it
not
in that way
those, right.
just to
you.
Get a thrill or
all
a
these
high
things, party,
or whatever,
where
in its native
not,
area,
yeah.
these were yeah. used in sacred rituals,
right.
and in this way, it's very disrespectful to just yeah. use it just right. to get high.
Yeah, and you use it for, I mean, I've read about it, and it's the sort of thing that one does very seriously. One prepares
ceremony.
For it.
Ceremony has
and
to
And one
be.
Also has a guide. Mm-hmm. Who is not who's not ingesting it? They have a guide. You're led through the whole thing, and it just. And you made me think of it, Paula, when you talked about the where did those properties come from? And I can imagine if that type of sage grows in North America, as it does, that native populations would have discovered that mm-hmm. and would have some very, very serious rituals.
Well, all those when you you know the plants have those properties. It's for us to seek out and find out mm-hmm. what they are
right. mm-hmm.
and communicate with it. Mm-hmm. So all of the sages, I would say, have a clarifying effect. Clary sage that mm-hmm. you use on the skin uh-huh. is very slightly astringent and clarifies congestion. You know, mm-hmm. so you mm-hmm. there's a way that it cleanses. Mm-hmm. All the sages have a cleansing mm-hmm. aspect mm-hmm. in a spiritual way by smudging or mm-hmm. an internal way by mm-hmm. direct mm-hmm. ingestion of mm-hmm. some kind.
And a lot of these mm-hmm. properties were found out by trial and error or observing wildlife, mm-hmm. Observing even their domesticated animals. They might have observed that their goats or their horses went towards comfrey when they were sick.
Right. Oh, or, so what was that? How would comfrey?
Comfrey actually is very helpful, especially to horses when they're ill. It's also a wound healer, internal wound healer. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, these plants that were just occurring in these native habitats, the animals knew. Mm-hmm. They were probably communicating directly with the plants and knew that it was helpful for them. They didn't know why. But I just noticed Joey down here.
Oh, yeah, you brought some other things.
Well, I had some salad burnet uh-huh. down here, and I found it very interesting that of all the herbs that are in this, Joey was most interested in salad burnet.
Oh, really?
And he had his nose in it for about 5 minutes, just sniffing it out. And I don't know why he was so attracted to it, but there was obviously something that was attracting him to it.
And what does salad burnet do?
Salad burnet is a really amazing little plant. Hang on just a second. Nobody knows about this plant, and it's actually one of my favorites. As you can see, it's just a delightful-looking little plant, too. It has a very kind of arching habit. It's very dainty and delicate-looking. It has this really amazing flower head that comes up in spring. But the botanical name for this is Sanguisorba minor, and Sanguisorba in Latin actually means blood drink. This was used traditionally, it's not used so much anymore, for to stop hemorrhaging, internal bleeding,
oh, wow.
Internal hemorrhaging. Uh-huh. But it's also blood cleansing, blood purifying. And when this herb really starts to come out right when cleavers does.
Oh, yeah. Cleavers, I want to talk about cleavers.
We know about cleavers as being a fantastic spring cleanse herb. It helps move the lymph. It helps start to clear the
blood.
So
you eat it?
So you eat it or you juice it.
Mm-hmm. Like nettles, too?
Just like nettles.
Nettles.
And this is really similar to those. And this is very similar to borage, too. Borage comes on pretty heavy in spring.
Right.
These have a similar flavor. Salad burnet actually tastes like cucumber.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually end up juicing this a lot, and I mm-hmm. juice it with cleavers, with other, like, beets or carrots or whatever. But this has a really delicious, mild cucumber flavor, just like borage. And it's used similarly, too, in borage is always thought of to kind of lighten the heart. Borage mm-hmm. is used a lot for heavy depressed states. Salad burnet, same thing.
Now, cleavers, I just mm-hmm. learned for the first time within the last few weeks that cleavers had a use, because to me it's just the thing that covers up my entire garden, you know, along about March or April. So it's
clings to your clothes.
It clings to everything. It clings. You can one of the things that's cool about it is you can go. I can go out and uncover my garden.
Easy, know, just it's easy, because the whole thing just comes holds on to each other.
Yeah, it's but it's. How do you? So you just take some and pour hot water over it to make a tea?
You can. I usually end up juicing it because I'd start juicing a lot in spring and early summer, and it's really easy to juice. But yeah, it's better used fresh than it is dry, and yeah, you just make a tea out of it. It's not so useful culinary wise. At least I don't know how to use it. It's mostly just used as a tea or juiced
because it's good for you.
It moves the kidneys.
Right?
You know, in when you start to come into spring and you've been eating maybe heavy foods all winter long, your blood starts to get heavy, starts to get sluggish.
It gets thick,
It gets thick and it gets sluggish. And Cleavers really starts to lighten the blood up, to move it, to move the lymph, get everything kind of moving, flowing is what you need. And Salad Burnett is another one that helps with that.
It's so interesting. So at the festival, at All Things Herbal, we've talked about the number of growers. You mentioned all those growers that will be there. You're going to be there with your botanicals. Right. What other kinds of vendors will be there, Paula?
Just mostly our regular farmers will be short. We'll have, you know, lunch food, and we'll have our regular farmers and regular food, the granola, and Dominique with her. She did peach pie today. Oh my God.
Strawberry rhubarb is.
Oh, her strawberry rhubarb galettes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, as far as the herb, but, the herb vendors.
Well, so that's Terry's realm. She knows.
Terry.
She organizes all that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I did. I wrote down some of the ones that I wanted to talk about a little bit. One of them is Napa Valley All Natural, and that's Anna Wingfield. She's coming from Napa. And she does essential oil products and scrubs and hydrosols, balms, flower essence products, really beautiful packaging. Her stuff is really amazing. Then there's Wise Women of the West. Tamita Dides. She brings her stuff is really unusual because she features Moroccan ingredients in most of her botanical products, which is really neat. She uses a lot of flower essences, and she's an astrologer. So if you have any questions at all about astrology, you have to go see Hamida. Blissful Hamida? Sunshine. Hamida, yeah.
Hamida, okay.
Yeah. Blissful Sunshine is going to be new with us this year. She's never vended yet at All Things Herbal, but she's been volunteering at the Herb Exchange this year, and she has some beautiful botanical skincare and herb teas, and you can actually go on her website. It's actually blissfulsunshine.com and learn about what products she has. I think she's also a massage therapist or maybe a yoga teacher, so she's got that. Then I have some other besides, I have a lot of botanical products, skincare products, cordials, elixirs. Then I have somebody that's coming, Bhavani, My Gypsy Heart, and she does a really neat thing. She takes old items that she then recycles and repurposes, and she paints them in wild gypsy designs and colors, really rich colors. And it's all recycled, all repurposed items. And I thought, I can't wait to see her stuff.
That's
really fun.
So really, so we have, if you want to grow herbs, and you don't need a big garden. Maybe you just have two or three pots on your front porch and you really want to grow the important herbs to you. So we have growers. We have those who are taking herbs and producing elixirs, balms, skincare products, all that sort of thing.
Exactly.
And then we have some sort of auxiliary vendors as well.
Yeah, a lot of them are kind of earth-based. There's a woman there that's going to be there that does fresh-pressed flower cards.
So those are always fun.
They're fun. And, you know, kind of a botanical theme, nature essence to most of the vendors that are there.
And this is all taking place at the Sebastopol Farmers Market on Sunday, June 3rd, Lucas's 11th birthday, from 10 a.m. until 1:30 p.m.
And I will 3 o'clock, though, actually.
3 o'clock, that's right. 3 o'clock for the herb fair. And I will be writing about it in Mouthful the Column, which will be out on Friday. We've got just a couple minutes left. Time flies on Mouthful. And I wanted to ask Paula, since we have her here. Paula, the Santa Rosa Original Farmers Market launched at its new location 8 days ago. I was there the first 2 days. How was yesterday?
It was beautiful. It's beautiful. You know, everyone's thinking, why? What's happened here? I mean, it's such an amazing venue, and I'm attributing it to a few things. One is the there's grass there, grass and trees, you can see the hills. You know, Nancy from Middleton Gardens, who's, you know, sort of the acid tongue of the farmers markets, both of them, used to call a vet's building the prison exercise yard. Have you? And it's not a prison exercise yard. It has grass and trees, and that really soothes the energy. I didn't ever notice it quite like this before.
Well, I think the word on the street, I mean, the word among people who go to farmers markets, and we talk about them, and we've gone forever, mm-hmm. is that the location at the Vets Building thrived in spite of the location, not mm-hmm. because of the mm-hmm. location. So in a sense, it's like the market's been freed.
Right.
It's been let out of its prison exercise yard, and you got to give Nancy
into the
for
grass,
that.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a beautiful view, and it just, I know it's technically smaller, correct?
It is smaller by about 15 vendors, which is a lot.
It feels bigger.
It feels bigger. I know. Isn't that interesting?
It feels bigger. It feels bigger.
Yeah.
So the second Saturday was
really nice, too. It wasn't as amazing as the first Saturday, mm-hmm. but it was very beautiful.
But it's also Memorial Day weekend.
It was Memorial Day weekend. Yeah, it was beautiful. I mean, I'm so grateful. And, you know, one of the things that Vicki Kemp said, who's been doing the market for 30 years or 25 years, is that this used, you know, Paul, she said, you know, Paul, this was built as a church. This was consecrated ground,
right. Yeah.
Which I have been thinking about that ever since she said that. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Maybe that's been our grace. It's grace, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah.
And I also just think it's Luther Burbank. It was named for Luther Burbank for a long time. And then how was Wednesday's market?
It was okay. Uh-huh. People did all right. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. So I was there on Wednesday, and several vendors said, hey, it's been really busy today.
Yeah, they did okay, which I was really surprised at that, because I didn't expect it. Uh-huh. I expected Wednesday to be quiet, because Wednesday is quiet anyway. Uh-huh. But
actually be a better location for Wednesday.
It might be a better
market.
Location all the way around, okay. Yeah.
Well, great. Well, congratulations on the move going so well.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you. Time flies on Mouthful, doesn't it?
Yes,
so we will see.
So much to say.
Stella, you're all invited back. We have Stella Flora Botanicals. We have Napa Valley Botanicals. We have Paula Downing, manager of the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market and the Sebastopol Farmers Market. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. Remember, if you wanted information about doing the Hawaiian transcription, send me an email at catsmilk@sonic.net. And once again, Mouthful's best, warmest wishes to Tom Eklund, the woodworker in Sebastopol. Meet me back here for another yummy episode. In fact, next Sunday we are going to be talking with Redwood Hill Goat Dairy. Have a great week.
This story, well, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough.
Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page.
And support for Mouthful tonight on KRCB-FM comes from members and from the Napa Valley Opera House, welcoming world-class artists and entertainers to the stage. Located in the heart of downtown Napa, this historic venue hosts the Napa Valley Ballet June 3rd at 3 and 6:30 p.m., Susie Gilbert with pianist Michael Grinsell Sunday, June 17th, and Cabaret presented by the Napa Valley Broadway Playhouse on June 22nd through July 1st. The Napa Valley Opera House. For a complete schedule, go to their website at nvoh.org or give them a call at area code 707-226-7372.